So one question is.
First question.
Is it true that just like not everyone could become a Moshe Feinstein in terms of Torah, so too not everyone could become like a Ari Levine in Midos? Would we say there's certain madrigos that people can't reach, the average person can't reach?
I don't know if I want to get into individual names like Ramosha Feinstein, Ravari Levine. I'd rather go back to people like Avram Avinu and David HaMelech. So I think we would concede that nobody today is going to reach the level of Shlemus and Midos as Avram Avinu or David HaMelech. So clearly there is such a thing. So, you know, again, you go back in earlier generations and great tzaddikim, it is probably true that based on a sort of like objective assessment, we're not going to reach the same levels as some extraordinarily great people, certainly in the earlier generations. But that isn't really the goal. We say, Masa yehi maisa lemaisa avos. We're always striving for those levels, not because we expect to reach them, but because it's our job to go as far as we can with the kochos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And one thing I will say is most people could get a very much further than they think they can. We always tend to set our sights short, and we don't realize how much we can actually do in both in Tikkun HaMidos and for that matter in other areas also. I was just recently telling somebody, I remember this feeling when I was like 13 years old, and there was a friend of mine who told me that he had studied the wrong bar mitzvah parsha, and he didn't realize until 3 weeks before the bar mitzvah that it was the wrong parsha, and in the last 3 weeks he had to cram and learn the correct parsha. I remember thinking at the time that it's humanly impossible to learn a parsha. I didn't believe him. It's humanly impossible to learn a parsha in 3 weeks. So later, when I was a Bakara, I learned a parsha in less than 3 days. Because after you've done like 35 parshios, 36 isn't that hard. So it's very hard for us to imagine what we can do. And what makes it even harder to imagine is the fact that when it comes to Torah and Midos and things like that, it's not just a question of utilizing all the kochos that we have. We actually grow new kochos. When we say mitzvah geres mitzvah, and a person grows in ruchnius, you become more gifted, more talented. You have more kochos. So how is it even possible to imagine what you could do? Because you'll be able to do things that you really can't do today. If you tried as hard as you could, you would not be able to do it. But if you keep growing, in a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you'll be able to do it. So it's exponential. You cannot really imagine. So yes, it's probably true that we can't reach, definitely true that we can't reach the perfection of Midos that certain great people have reached before us. But I think we could do enormously more than we think we can because of the fact that we can't factor in that growth rate. We don't know how to look at that. And sometimes to get a little bit of a taste of that, it pays to look backwards and see the things we could do now and think back that we couldn't imagine that we could have done that X number of years ago. So although, yes, it's true, at the same time, it's not particularly relevant because we could grow a lot and we have to keep our sights. One of the reasons they bring down why we say, Masa yehi maisa lemaisa avos, because if you strive for anything less than that, you may sell yourself short. If a person says, Masa yehi maisa lemaisa Aryeh Levin, maybe you'll reach the Maaseh Aryeh Levin and you'll stop. If you're looking for Avraham Avinu, you'll never stop, and then you'll be able to reach the highest levels that you could reach.
Is there a difference between Galus and Torah and Midos, or this, what Rebbe was saying, applies to both?
I think it applies to both. The growth in both areas. Okay.
Someone asked, is it a Mishagas or a valid Hashkafa that when it comes to some people not buying things from Germany or not flying through Germany or anything else dealing with the country?
I would not call it a mishigas, especially as somebody who had suffered through the Holocaust or has close family who has. Apiashkafa, I don't know that it's required. The Rashiba once said a very, I don't know if I want this recorded here, but get him into a lot of trouble. But the Rashiba once said, it's not, I can't say that, it's not wrong. Yeah, I say if you feel it, it's a legitimate hashkafa, a legitimate feeling. I say it's the right thing, it's sort of like imposing it as an obligation to everybody. I don't think it's an obligation for everybody, but I think it should be respected, you know, and it is a reasonable feeling, a reasonable position, and that's how you feel, call it kavod, go with it.
Someone asked, is a chavetz
chaim? The Japanese were not bad, though.
Okay, iPhone. Is the chavetz chaim system stretching itself too thin with too many batei midrashim?
Give it time, Rabbi Asad. This Purim, an individual who was, shall we say, a little bit happy. Actually, he was a little bit unhappy, to be quite accurate. With perhaps some medicinal assistance, was complaining to me that every branch is trying to start a Beis Medrash and he's spreading too thin. Don't let Cleveland open a Beis Medrash. If it opens a Beis Medrash, it's going to hurt Miami, it's going to hurt Milwaukee. You can't do it. So I said to him, yeah, but it's not going to hurt Cleveland. So I don't know how we could tell a branch if they want to try. I'm not sure that they could pull it off. It's a different story. If they want to try, so over time it goes in waves. You know, sometimes maybe it's spread a little too thin, then it fills in. But when we don't play God. I can't tell you like what's best for all Klal Yisrael in this. I think if somebody's trying to start a yeshiva in the community, and there'll be a stronger yeshiva, and there'll be a stronger impact in the community. If he has a base medrash, call it kavod, let him try. And if Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't want it, it won't happen. You know, like for us to sort of like pull the strings, ki'ilu, we know what's best for all the value, all the Klal Yisrael. I don't think I'm that smart. If somebody else thinks they are, you know, they could take the kapata as a position. I could retire to North Miami Beach. I don't have to deal with those stupid snowstorms. I'll get a couple of chavrusas. I'm fine with that, you know. But the, so I don't know. Maybe short term it does have impact, you know. Somebody was telling me, was it you? Who just told me that there are more branches recruiting, because in Queens, you know, we don't really accommodate in Queens the first, second, third base manager guys so much. So our high school seniors is open season, right? So every branch comes recruiting. So I think Rabbi Kier told me there are more branches recruiting than there are actual students in the senior class. So I think each branch gets 3/4 of a Talmud. I once got a call from a parent who was himself a Chavetz Chaim alumnus that his son is going crazy in 12th grade. He's being recruited from this one, that one. He doesn't know what to do. It's Mamish Meshuga. So like, what are you going to do about it? I said, I don't really think I'm going to do anything about it. But I think it's not so bad if one time in his life he really feels wanted. But they weren't too happy with that answer. but we're still friends. So I don't know. The answer is it could be, you know, maybe it does hurt short term, maybe it doesn't, but I don't see, like, you know, being manipulative enough or brave enough, or, you know, like, I look at it as more like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job, you know, and each community is entitled to try to do what's best for their community. And you can't tell Cleveland not to have a base manager because it's going to be bad for Miami, it's going to be good for Cleveland. HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks, you know, it's better that Miami should be stronger and Cleveland should be schwacher. Don't worry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will work it out.
How does the Mitzvah Spotless work? What does it do to a person, to a system, and most importantly, how is it done?
Okay, important question. The first thing to understand is important to understand how Mitzvah Yispayos works, what it is. I got an interesting question at a different branch. I think they asked me, can Yispayos work on secular things? You know, and the answer is really yes. That may not be good, but Yispayos means emotion. And what Rabbi Yisrael highlighted was the fact that when you think about something or you focus about something and it's done with a certain emotional feeling and contact, it makes a stronger impression on your subconscious, on your being, than when, without emotion. That's the essence of Ispailus. And maybe we should back up a step before that. You know, we know Api Musar, one of the most difficult and, on the other hand, most important things, is to get those things that we might understand intellectually to be part of our personality. That becomes our unconscious response, our automatic response, our feelings. As they said, the distance between the brain and the heart is the longest distance in the world. How does that work? So Rabbi Yisrael gives a phenomenal mashal. He says, a little child learns how to read. What do? They sound out the letters, right? Right? Each letter. And that's how they learn. Read. After a while, you know, unless they have reading problems, kids could read without sounding out. They look at the word and it's able to say the word. They don't have to sound out the letters anymore. What happened? What used to be a conscious process, you have to think about this letter, think about the next letter, and think about the next, it became an unconscious process. It happens automatically. How did you get from point A to point B? So he says, the essence of it is practice. But how do you practice? So let me put numbers to it. He doesn't say numbers, but let me put numbers to it. Suppose, for argument's sake, if you take a child and he practices reading for an hour a day for 100 days, he'll be able to read. But without thinking it through unconsciously. That's 100 hours of practice. What do you think would happen if he practiced 10 hours a day for 10 days, if he could survive it? He wouldn't learn how to read. Because the unconscious only could absorb so much on any given time. Let's say he did an hour a day every fifth day for 500 days. He also wouldn't learn how to read. Because whatever impression was made from the last lesson wears off by the time you get to the next lesson. So Rabbi Yisrael said that's how Musar works. If you do a certain amount of, you do tons of Musar, sit there for 6 hours doing Musar, you're not going to gain that much more than a half an hour. Because you only absorb, at least in this aspect, you might have more Chachos of Musar because you're learning more material. But in terms of absorbing, you can only absorb so much on a given day. If you only learn Musa sporadically, by the time you do the next lesson, the old one wears off. It doesn't work so well. So Musa is the process of getting those lessons into ourselves, into our kishkas. Hispailus is a multiplier. You can learn Musa without Hispailus and absorb something. But when you learn with Hispailus, it's a multiplier. I think Hispailus will multiply anything that you have Hispailus about. Think about it with emotion. So that's really what Musar B'Hispailus is all about. It's to get him know how to do it. It isn't so easy, and I don't think people necessarily are able to achieve Hispailus every single day, all the time. But so what? If you get it sometimes, it's also good. When you learn Musar every day, you're still maintaining, you know, that continuity. You'll be okay. But the idea of Hispailus is to focus on thinking about something, and sometimes different things move different people. You might find something that speaks to you, so that's your target for Hispailus. It says the Lashon is Mitzayir B'Sichla, to think about what it means to have Kol Hatzir, imagine the situation, imagine circumstances, and there are certain aids. The ideal Hispailus comes from the memory itself. You know, you get into it, and it moves you until your lips are moving, you're feeling sometimes a niggin, it's this. These are the manifestations of Hispailus. Some people just sit down and start singing, but they're not even thinking about anything. So they're thinking nice, sad tunes that's, you know, about what? But you have to be thinking, it has to be, you know, focusing on something. Can you get yourself into the mood? Probably. You know, but that's what it's about. So different things work for different people. Some are more demonstrative, some are less demonstrative. But the idea is to achieve an emotional content, to think about and to feel it, the argosha. You know, let's say just a simplistic example, but there are many sophisticated. We can't go through all examples. Suppose you have it's bitter. And you start thinking about it, how a person has in front of him a treasure that he could easily take. Because Rav gives him mitzvahs, and you turn away, and what are you getting said? You know, frustration and disappointment and lack of fulfillment, and you see people, and you think of people who are miserable, and do I want to be like that? And people, and you get it, and it creates a certain emotional response. now you think he Rav Amaras Rosh Hashem. It's with a feeling, an argasha. You know, you talk about approaching the Yom HaDin, so you could imagine a little bit. Imagine I was going to court, you know, and I'm coming in and we're making our closing arguments, and the lawyer tells me it's 50-50, you know, you might go to jail, you might this, and you know, how you feel, how would I feel in certain circumstances, and this, and that's the Yom HaDin, you know, that's emotional. You know, you build up these emotional contacts, you get into it. So that's really what Ispailus, but the essence of Ispailus is to take that Musar, and by focusing on it in an emotional way, it multiplies the impact that it has on you, and therefore becomes more a part of you, and you grow more, it becomes more of your response.
Does that mean that if a person's in an emotional setting, so if he could, let's say a person is called to court, and it is 50-50, and he's very nervous, so you could take advantage and say, oh, it's going to be Yom HaDin, this is what it's going to be like.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, a person's at a funeral, told Lachas the Blaise Ovel, and you see there is a Yom HaMisa, and people die, and this world is not forever. We put out of your minds, you focus on it. You could use that as a hispilus, for sure. You know, a person could take advantage of those things.
Maybe the hispilus, the Musar hispilus is helping you change your... No, let's say someone's a Balkas, so he learns about how bad Kas is. And he suddenly becomes not a Balkas, or
nothing is sudden.
There's other.
I wish it were sudden. It's not sudden. It's very gradual. Musar based palace is not the only tool in the arsenal, and I don't know if it could work all by itself. You know, Rosh Hashiva used to talk about the Chachmas HaMusar, the Libud HaMusar, and the Chinuch HaMusar. So Chachmas HaMusar is the ideas, understanding, knowledge, the shmuzin, being familiar with the sources, understanding how Kochas and Nefesh work, Midas work, what the you know, all the Chachma involved in it. Limud HaMusar is the spilus, the emotional making part of you. The Chinuch HaMusar is carrying out in practice. The fact of the matter is, every time you get angry, it builds up the midah of anger. Every time you control your anger, it softens the midah of anger. So the Musar spilus is a tool, but if you're getting angry, it could counteract whatever you're doing. So you need to work on multiple fronts. So if a person has an issue with a temper, there are different practical takbulas that a person could do to try to minimize his anger or to avoid the angry situation. So it gives the Musar Yisraelis a chance to work. It's not sudden. It's a slow, gradual process. It may take years, but a person can get there. So let's say for Kas, you know, there are things you do. One of the great takbulas, Kas, I call it anticipation. But basically, if you kind of prepare yourself in advance for situations. Sometimes you know there are certain situations that get you upset, get you annoyed. And if you're prepared for them, a lot of times it takes away a lot of the nisayon. Sometimes it used to get you angry, just makes you laugh because you knew that was going to happen. I tell my story about the little old ladies in the supermarket. You know, when I was in Kollel, my wife was working, so I did the shopping. So my original mahalach was I went during lunch break, because that was my longest break. I went to do the shopping during lunch break. It turns out to have been a mistake because during the middle of the day, lunch break, the store is basically full of little old ladies who are doing their shopping, and they have a coupon for every single item in their basket. The whole basket's full, and invariably they get into an argument with the cashier whether all the coupons were credited. And they're arguing about the 10 cents. I remember one time handing the lady a dime. I said, you know, whatever, here's the 10 cents. She was not happy. She wanted to win the argument. But, and then I would go late for mincha. I want to be, you know. So I was getting angry. So then I kind of like prepped myself. You know there's going to be this little lady, and then you're going to check out which is the one who's going to have the argument there. And then when it happens, you start laughing because it's exactly what you predicted. You don't get angry. Now, you haven't controlled your kas, but the less you get angry, the easier it is to grow. And that's really... Then I switched to doing the shopping during breakfast. Even though there was less time, the store was empty. No little old ladies, hardly anybody there at all. And you just rushed to the thing. The only problem was between 8:30 and 9, there's no parking by the parking meters. So I would park in the side street. And every 8 or 9 weeks, I would get a ticket. Those days, the tickets weren't that expensive. It was like $10, so it's like $1.25 to park. It's not that bad. You know, if it was the meter, it would have been 50 cents. It's a little bit more expensive than the meter, but it wasn't so bad. So So that was the new mahalach. But the fact of the matter is, anticipation is that then there are different tempos to control the anger once you have, not to act immediately, not to speak immediately, speak in a soft voice, force yourself to speak quietly and slowly, helps you control the anger. It says, Mana rach meshiv chema. It doesn't mean the other guy's chema only, it means yours too. You speak softly, you speak different takbulas, the Sfarim talk about it, and you have to engage in, and every midah is like that. You have to engage in the chinuch ha-musar as well, because whatever you gain with your musar spas, you could easily lose. And again, musar spas is not an instant solution, so you're still going to get angry.
So you could easily lose. Half hour during musar spas every day. So he's not really going to accomplish what he should be accomplishing because he's never focusing on chinuch ha-musar.
If he doesn't do the chinuch, right. If he doesn't do the
really a lot more time is needed to spend on working on your midas.
Yeah, but it isn't a learning time necessarily. It's practice time. It's
how
you
have to think of tapulas. You have to prepare yourself. You have to
correct. Project. Now, I wouldn't say you're not getting anything, but you're going to be cutting back a lot on what you could accomplish. You know, and yeah, if you don't do all the three things, you're not going to gain as much as you can. You're not going to go get as far as you could or as fast as you could. Okay.
On the topic of singing. What do you do if you're by a meal and all of a sudden women start to sing Zmiris?
Sing along.
Really loud.
Yeah, really, that's the Eitzah. You sing along yourself and you can help drown out. You know, the voice, especially if you're a really bad singer.
Isn't that worse than you're saying Dovah Shebekdusha in the snare of Nerva?
I know it's Dovah Shebekdusha.
Zmiris.
Well, I don't think so. It's not Bimel Kamerva. I never heard such thing. Like when singing Nala say, I don't think there's such halacha. I have to double check it, but I don't think there's such halacha. But that's one of the etzes they give. You know, you sing along, you don't hear it so much, and you're focused on yourself. And next meal, get a different house. Unless it's your own house, then. Well, if it's your own house, probably that's your sister's mother. You know, that's a bad.
Should you make a machal?
You know, the question of tochacha is always a question, a delicate question. You have to know whether it's going to do more good or more harm. You know, so you know, it's hard to know. If you think they might listen to you, usually b'shas mice is not the best time. You know, when somebody just did it, they're very defensive. It hardly ever works. But at a different time, you know, sometimes it's a question of education. You know, it does. People sometimes always know. So you have to make ashar whether you think there's a chance that you might be successful. To make a macha b'shas ma'aseh is not likely to be productive in most cases. But to talk about it afterwards, maybe if you know the people and you have a kesher and you know maybe you understand where they're coming from. They don't. Sometimes today it could be no a women's rights movement. You know, we have the right to sing. So you got to know what you're dealing with.
Question here. I've heard from many rabbis use the phrase, you have to be normal. What are some practical definitions in the Gedarim of that
I've
concept?
I've always been normal. I haven't done anything not normal. Like, what?
Is it normal to ask such a question?
Of course, the problem with the word normal is everyone thinks they're the ones who are normal and everyone else is not normal. So it's the almost undefinable term. But I think maybe to the extent that we could define it is that a person has to be balanced, you know, not dealing with extremes, you know, behaviors that make it difficult for you to interact with other people, make it difficult for you to be happy. You know, they're outside the what you might call the bell curve. Now, people have different personalities. What's normal for one isn't normal for another, but there is a certain, when somebody really stands out from his environment or he's not able to, he can't smile, that's a telltale sign when the guy can't smile anymore. Some people never could smile, so maybe that's normal for them. But you know, I do recall a certain individual who, he was a student of ours in Taras Chaim, an outstanding student in many, many ways. Wasn't the smartest kid on the block, but he was quite smart. Diligent, conscientious, good midos, leadership, you know, all kinds of skills. So we used to have, you know, elections for the GO president, but it was kind of rigged. Because you didn't really run for the GO president without our, selection. And I thought this guy would be a great candidate. So at the end of 11th grade, I was talking to him about it. And he didn't want to do it. He says, it's too much pressure. To me, that was a red flag. I got very nervous about him. Because some people say, I don't want to do it because it's too much work. That I get. I'm lazy. I'm happy the way it is. I don't want to take on the other work. It's too much pressure. It's fun. There is a certain amount of pressure because if you're running an event or something, you have to get it done. There's a deadline to this. But it's a fun activity. People don't usually react today by saying it's too much pressure. So, I already made a note. I got to keep my eye on this. The first thing that started happening was the Shemoneh Esrei started growing. The guy's not taking off his hat, stopped smiling. Eventually, he really had I couldn't stop it, but eventually he had a cry, came to my house one night, just starts crying, and all his issues with his parents and with his this and with his that, and that became pretty much dysfunctional. And although he's significantly recovered now, he still never regained the promise that one would have thought he had beforehand. So those behaviors are not normal, but they came from obviously a pathology. There was something going on there. But so a person can't smile, he can't interact with people in a reasonable way. He's too intense about what he does, or on the other hand, for care, he's too wild and reckless and has no boundaries that people normally have. There's something wrong. So I think that's what we're saying, but. So people get so caught up sometimes. I think what they're probably talking about, the context that's most usually said, is a person gets so caught up, he wants to grow, he wants to strike, it's a wonderful impulse. There's a great story my uncle told me. I think that's a good seer of this. Him, my uncle Yitzchak. So he was a menahel in a very yeshivish place in Borough Park for many years. He used to run their summer camp program. He wasn't the principal, he was some kind of administrator there, but he used to run the summer camp program. And he noticed this guy is like always in the base medrash. And the program was, it was high school kids. They had a morning seder with a shir. But in the afternoon, you had activities, swimming and ball playing and stuff like that. There was a night seder. This guy was like in the base medrash the whole day, so he calls him in, what's your schedule? So he gets up early, and he's learning, he had a whole seder. He's learning Daf Yomi, he's learning Shulchan Aruch, a daf a day. He's doing Tanakh, a certain number of psukim in Tanakh each day, and he's learning, of course, whatever their Seder was, and he has this whole thing planned out. And he's basically was learning the whole day long. So my uncle said to him, it's a wonderful thing to learn Kol HaTorah Kula, but nobody said you have to do it all in 1 year. So that's not really normal. You have a high school kid, all of a sudden, going from whatever Seder to 24/7, if he was Rabbi Yashav, he probably would have been doing it at the age of 9. So he was gozer on him. They wasn't allowed in the, he made limits on him. He wasn't allowed into the Beis Medrash before Shacharis. My uncle came early every day to make sure that he wasn't there. He had to go to breakfast, he had to go to lunch, he had to take at least one activity, he wanted a little extra night Seder, a little extra that he was allowed. But he gave him a. So extreme changes are generally not so normal. So that's the thing. But so a person has to. If you get that super intensity, there could be something unhealthy about it. But what exactly is normal? It's hard to define.
We have time for more.
Mm-hmm. What time is it?
It's 5 to 4.
Oh, we'll do one more. Go to 4. I started late.
This is how do we understand stories of like Talmid Chachamim that sometimes do horrible things in terms of their spouses, in terms of humiliating Talmidim, abusing kids, or extreme hashkafas? How do we process that?
There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, Amud Beis. About halfway down the Amud. I'll give you even better. It's in Perek HaChelek. So if you're really interested in finding it, I limit it to about 25 blot. You could 20 blot, whatever it is, you could look for it. The Gemara talks about two of the great Rishayim of Tanakh. One was Doeg HaDomi, and the other were Achitofel. They're both listed amongst the people who have no chelik in Olam Haba. But they were Rosh Sanhedrin. So the Gemara asked the Kasha, I believe it was on Achitofel, that if he learned so much Torah, how could he have been such a Rasha? And the Gemara says that his learning was misfasayim ul'chutz, from his lips and out. Torah can change a person, can elevate a person, can make him grow in ruchnis, in midos, in many, many ways. But you have to invite the Torah into your heart. You have to be open to it. You can resist it. So on the extreme, and I'm not sure what we're talking about in this question, there's all different levels. But on the extreme, it is conceivable, and historically it has happened, that you had a person who was a great enough Talmud Chacham that he was a Rosh Sanhedrin in the generation of David HaMelech, where there were Nevi'im around, and he was a Rosh Sanhedrin. That's how knowledgeable he was in Torah, and he was a Rosh HaMerusha. And he's Einu Chilek Balam Haba, because his Torah was Misasayim Uluchutz. You have to be open for the Torah to work. So it is conceivable, and again, there are many, many, many levels. So a person could learn Torah, it's not a guarantee that he's going to be a tzaddik. Now, generally speaking, we have a chazakah. If a person is recognized to be a gadol b'Torah, and he's recognized by his peers and associates, and he appears that way, we have a chazakah that he's a tzaddik, he's a gadol b'Torah. Our chazakahs are not always right. Sometimes they're wrong. But it's the best we have to go on. That's not our business. The Kadosh Baruch Hu's business. So it's conceivable sometimes you have a person that has a chazakah, that he's a big talmud chacham, and he really wasn't so much, and behind the scenes things were not going so great, and he wasn't really inviting the Torah into his heart. It could happen. Now, in specific instances, I hesitate to make a judgment, because there's also such a thing as a person who is genuinely a great person, a good person, who makes mistakes and could do something wrong. You're going to sort of cast him in this light because he once did this thing. If it's a pattern, if it's ongoing, it's one thing, but people. And I recall a story. There was a big controversy. I'll tell my Miami stories in Miami too. There was a big controversy, which I'm not going to get into, even though it's juicy and everything else, in Miami, and it created a big machlokas in the community. And different gadolim got involved. Rosh Yeshiva got involved, and there was another gadol who got involved. And there were people in the community who had very, very major tainus on this other guy. And he was a well-known actual gadol b'Yisrael. Had major tainus on him. Rosh Yeshiva told me, off the record, that he wasn't so surprised. Because things like that have happened in the past, with this, but he was still an Adam Gadol. So there was a gentleman in the community who was very upset about it. And I remember my father-in-law, Rabbi Naiman, was visiting us, and he asked to meet with him. So the guy came, and he started complaining about this Gadol. So Rabbi Naiman told him a story. He says, in the time of the Chafetz Chaim, there was apparently some taina against one of the Gedolim of that generation, and they came to complain to the Chafetz Chaim. Presumably it was Latoel, so the Chafetz Chaim went to listen to him in the first place. And Chafetz Chaim said to him, it says, Kol Mem Shana, the 40 years that Klal Yisrael was benezifa, they were rejected by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu was also benezifa. He did not have the same Gili Shechina. He says, Klum Higdalti Oscha El Bishvil Banai, did I elevate you for any other reason but for my children? Hare Heim Nizufim Afata Benezifa. That's the Chazal. So Chafetz Chaim said, every generation gets the Gedolim that it deserves. If the generation is greater, the Gedolim are greater. If the generation is schwacher, the Gedolim are schwacher. We live in a weaker generation, so we have weaker, so the Gedolim could make mistakes, could do something wrong. Doesn't mean it's not a Gadol, it just means that we don't deserve any better than that. So that's what my father told him. I think he was satisfied. So you can't jump to a conclusion because, first of all, you might be wrong in your assessment. Maybe what he did was justified, was right. You don't know the whole story. You don't know the judgment, And even if he was wrong, it doesn't mean that he's not a gadol. But there is such a thing as a person who could be knowledgeable in Torah and is really not a gadol. It's a facade. It could happen.
should be, it's like a, it sounds like a very tricky sugya, because I would assume that the Pashto says we just don't understand. Certain Gedalim had like a very sharp way of talking, and we look at them like, whoa, that doesn't look mustardic. But it's not necessarily, I'm asking if it's necessarily true or is it
wrong. It's not necessarily true. Not necessarily true, but you have to know. I mean, there are a lot of different things that are mentioned in the question. You know, like mistreating his family.
Let's say with Talmidim, like certain, you hear like certain people, like in Shir, they would just like totally be mavat to the person. Not, and now I don't know Pshat.
I think that if a person does that sort of as a regular thing, it comes from a certain Islavus in his learning. Hopefully, people don't take it as a put down. It's probably not so bad. It's not our mahalo.
The other Gedalim won't do that.
Right. It's not our mahalo. Right. I don't think it's so great for chinuch because people do get intimidated, you know. And it, you know, I have my little chinuch thing. It was an insight to me just on mindset, but a contrast. I was visiting a certain yeshiva in Pumfum where the Rosh Yeshiva was, and he was not on the moetzes, but he was a well-known chasher Rosh Yeshiva. And I happened to was there for Shabbos. I was saying Sunday morning. He was giving a shir Sunday morning. So why not? I'm here anyway. So I went to the shir. In the middle of the shir, a fella asked the kasha on the shir. I thought was a really good kasha. And the Rosh Yeshiva says, Gornish kan kasha. He didn't say it like with any anger. He just said, Gornish kan kasha. And he went further. I actually thought it was a good kasha. And I actually thought of a terrace. So I figured, what do I have to lose? I'm a guest. I'm leaving town in an hour. I'll probably never see him again. So I went over to him after shir. He was very nice to me, by the way. And I said, you know, the fella asked this question. I thought maybe you could answer like this. I didn't say, good kasha, not good kasha. So he said to me, yeah, I had that kasha last night also, and Taka had your answer. You could also say another answer, and you gave me a second answer. Both answers were like a shtickle chiddush. It was a chilek. It wasn't like a mistake in the cheshvin. They were answers. I walk away stunned. He himself had the same question. He had two answers. They were good answers. One of them I was mechaven to. The other one I wasn't. And he's telling the guy, Gornish kan kasha. So it hit me after thinking about it, like, what's going on? I realized it's a different mindset. The mindset is, when I'm presenting a shir, I'm presenting a piece of Torah which I think is Ois Kahalan, I think it's Karbala Emes, you know, Kefi Hasagas Yadenu, and I'm sharing it with the Oilam. If you're asking me a kasha, you're telling me it's not Ois Kahalan, and it's not Emes. That's not true. I have two answers, Gornish kan kasha. But it's not the mindset that I'm teaching Talmidim. I'm presenting it into the atmosphere, and the Talmidim can take it. So the kasha is viewed as a challenge to the Amita Sadavar, and since I have two wonderful answers, there's no challenge. We're sort of trained to look at it as a chinuch opportunity. You asked a good question, I'm going to build it up. He's thinking good. I'll tell you like this, I'll tell you like that. The person walks away with a deeper understanding of the share, with an analysis, understanding a chizuk, that he asked a good question. You know, it's a different... By contrast, I remember once the Shiva gave a pilpa share. I remember this very well because I didn't know how to react to it. I didn't know whether I was happy or sad. But he gave a pilpa share, and one of the sessions, he brought in a rajva, and he brought a raya from the rajva to one step of the share. The share would have been valid without the raya from the rajva. It wasn't necessary, but he had the step. Rashid was learning the Rajma in a rather chiddushdik way. Nobody in the yeshiva learned the Rajma that way. I personally had said a chabur on that Rajma. And I proved from a kitzos that the Rajma was not learning what we thought was the conventional way, and I said this mahalach in the Rajma. And then the second part of my chabur is, why did the kitzos learn such a strange child in the Rajma? So I was told it on another thing, and it was Raya was. Rashid was just learning that shot in the Rajma, straight out. No kitzos in the right. So on the one hand, it was the same shot, but on the other hand, he was telling me it's no chiddush. And the guys were arguing what we thought was the pashup shot, and he's saying, no, that's no good. He can't mean that. It's not. And we spent the whole week arguing about whether this so-called pashup shot in the rajba could work. Nafkamina is the rajba raya to one step in the shir. Totally peripheral. In the course of the discussion, I was able to get my kitzos in. I said, the kitzos is a raya to the Rosh Shiva's reading. So the Rishi was looking at it and says, you're right, it is a raya, but what do I need a raya for? I don't know. So that was the story. But so I happened to meet the Rosh Hashiva in the hallway a few days later after the shir was over. I said, you know, we spent the whole week hacking about the raya. We really didn't discuss the shir at all. Why would we do that? So the Rishiva smiled and they said, you think I present the shir, we discuss the shir to show that I'm right? I already knew that I was right. The purpose of the shir is that we should have a discussion and learning and get into it and grow. And so it was happening in the Rasha. What do I care if it wasn't the shir? So it's such an extreme opposite. Like, the whole point of presenting the shir is to show the MS. And here, the whole point of presenting the shir is to learn with the Talmidim. And if we're going to spend a week talking about the Rasha, it's right one step in the shir, but it's lumdis and habana and how to read the Rasha properly. So I don't care. So we didn't discuss the shir. Some of us got a little frustrated, but Rishiva's angle was that's his angle. So that's our mahal, but that's not an avera. That's just a different mindset. Chinuch, you know, mindset we have. Okay, Rabbi Osai.
Thank you.
Well, I'm sure we didn't get to everything, so you're just gonna have to invite me back.